So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone, or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
And mind you, I haven't been in the church for a long time. And I hated God. I did. All the victimizing, like, why me? That was me. Why me? You owe me something. You owe me something. That was my mentality. You know, and then I went through a divorce. Like, come on, man. Like, really? Like, you, come on. Like, if you're such a good God.
Before we dive in, just a quick favor. If you're enjoying what we're doing at Angels Among Us, please take a second to rate and review the show. And if something in today's episode touches your heart, please share it with a friend. Welcome to Angels Among Us, the podcast where we share real stories of angelic encounters. Each episode, you'll hear firsthand accounts of divine protection, guidance, and miraculous interventions that remind us we're never truly alone. Whether through a whisper of comfort, an unseen hand of protection, or an unmistakable presence, angels are closer than we think. Join us as we explore these powerful experiences of angels, both seen and unseen. Hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of Angels Among Us. As you can see, if you're watching, it is just me today with Sean Rubish. I'm super excited to be here with Sean. We've had a couple conversations. If y'all remember Jason Koger's episode from a few months back, Jason got a hold of us. I think he kind of tagged both of us in a video or something, right? And said, Brent, you need to get a hold of Sean. And Sean, Brent, you know, he kind of introduced us on social media, if I remember right. And so, yeah, that's how we got introduced. We talked a little bit, and I'm excited to be here with Sean and to be able to learn from him. So, Sean, I'm going to let you introduce yourself. Again, if y'all are watching, you can see some apparel that he has on. He'll be talking about that a little bit later. That's all part of his story. But yeah, we're excited to have you. I'm sorry that Michaela isn't here, but we'll get through it. I was just telling Sean right before we started recording that I've done a couple without Michaela, and one of them, she said, that's probably my favorite episode ever. And I said, that's right. That's what I'm capable of, babe. So, so I think we're in for a treat again. But no, nothing on my own doing. This will all be Sean. So Sean, go ahead and introduce yourself and go ahead and tell everybody about your life.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. My name's Sean Rubish. I grew up in Preble County, Ohio. It's easier to say Dayton, Ohio, west of Dayton, Ohio, is the easiest way to say it, right off of state route or Interstate 70. So growing up, I lived with my dad for the most of the time. I never really knew my real mother, never had a relationship with her at all. So growing up with dad, my dad, at the time, when you're in a situation, you don't really know how bad it is. My dad was an alcoholic, and he did some drugs. I was super young, so I didn't know exactly what he did, but I knew he was doing drugs, and I just knew it was a bad environment now that I grew up. So grew up with my dad the whole time, and we were pretty poor. my dad got married, and so I had two stepbrothers. I have an older brother, a real older brother, and then I had two stepbrothers. We lived in a two-bedroom house, so there was four boys from the ages. I mean, we're all within 3 years old of each other, so it was kind of a crazy, crazy time. We used to fight all the time. But I do remember going to church a lot. You know, my dad and my stepmom always took us to church. And I hated church back in the day, man, because, you know, you go to church. I know what was, I understood what church was about, but yet we'd come home and not live that life. So even at a young age, I kind of resented, you know, church. Didn't like it. Didn't like sitting through it and all that stuff. They would talk in tongues, which was just really weird for a, you know, a 7 or 8 year old kid, you know, like, what the heck are they doing? So like I said, my dad did get married, when I was young. I was about probably 7 or 8 years old. He got married, and, the marriage didn't last very long. He was, like I said, he did drink a lot. I remember parties all the time, and they got divorced, and that's when it really kind of intensified. So I remember when I was in the fifth grade, I was 10 years old in the fifth grade, after the separation and divorce, everything, we would always go to my grandmother's house on the weekends, me and my real brother. We'd always go to grandma's house. My grandma's name is Ruby May Rubush, and she was about 4'9". But she was the meanest and sweetest thing you'll ever know. Anybody that knows my grandma knows that you want to get on her good side, because she has a temper. So, but yeah, we would always, the good thing is we'd had a chaotic life with my dad, but then on the weekends, we'd always go, you know, stay with grandma and grandpa. And my grandpa had a massive stroke. So he was paralyzed on his left side all the way down, and he couldn't move. He was about 6'5", 275, 300 pounds. And like I said, my grandmother was a tiny lady, but she took care of him. So we would always get, you know, kind of the chaotic life over here with my dad and the partying. And then on the weekends, we'd have a little bit more stability with my grandmother. And then I remember one Friday getting off the bus at my dad's house. And that was the routine. We'd get off the bus and we'd go straight to our grandma's house. And he wasn't there that day that we got off the bus. And which is not a huge deal, not a huge thing. But then he had a roommate, and his roommate is like, "Hey, I'm going to take you to grandma's." So we're driving. It was only about a 7 minute drive, pretty short drive. So we instead of going to our grandma's, he took us to our neighbor's house and dropped us off. Good buddy. I mean, just a great friend. So he drops us off there, and I was like, "Okay, this is fine." You don't really think too much of it. And I remember that was about, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock. And then about 6 or 7 o'clock comes around, and it's like, "Hey, we're hungry." Because our grandma, that's one thing that our grandma was. She was the amazing cook. Like, we were always fed extremely well there. So we're asking if we can go to our grandma's house. And, you know, my friend's parents aren't letting us, which was really odd. It was odd that we got dropped off there, and then it was odd that we couldn't go over there. So they fed us there, and we were hanging out and just, you know, kind of wondering what's going on. Then about 9:30, we're just like, "Hey, I'm going to my grandma's house." It's literally right next door. And so we go over there, and she was visibly upset. You could tell something was wrong, but she didn't tell us anything. You know, I was 10 years old. My brother was 11. It's not like we have the emotional capacity to ask her what's wrong and, you know, all that right. stuff. So I remember me and my brother were sitting on the floor, and we had one of those little 12-inch black and white TVs in our dining room. And I remember a news flash came across and it said, 3 people shot in New Paris, Ohio, 2 dead. And it put a thought in our head like, what? So, you know, I mean, it's about 10 o'clock, 10:30, and we're getting tired and our grandma's just bawling. Like, we ask her what's wrong. And she finally tells us that my dad was shot and killed that day in New Paris, Ohio. So 10 years old, me and my brother both lost our dad that day, and it was to violence. So life changed forever right there, for sure. So moving on, there was a short custody battle. My real mom tried to get us, but we didn't know her. Never met her. So the judge asked us where we wanted to live, and of course we said grandma's house. Mm-hmm. So the judge took our what we wanted, and he granted that. So we went to live with grandma and grandpa. So now our grandma, like, she has a paraplegic husband that she's taking care of, and then 2 grandkids. Life with grandma started. And, right when we were getting in the routine, I would say about 6 months after that, it was December 21st. And, I vividly remember our grandma, like, we lived in the basement. We had an awesome basement. There was 2 bedrooms down there and, an open space for a living room. So me and my brother lived down there, and, grandma and grandpa lived upstairs. And I remember our grandma on December 21st, early in the morning, like super early, probably about 4 a.m. in the morning, was just screaming at us, boys, boys, boys. And we run upstairs, and as you're running up the stairs, we saw this black smoke everywhere. Mm. Basically, our house was complete. The house we lived in was engulfed in flames, and our grandpa was in it. So all I remember is me and my brother trying to go into the room, and there was just no way. The fire was already way too out of control. And this was back before smoke detectors and all that stuff. I mean, I'm sure there were smoke detectors, but we didn't have them.
Not like they are today.
Yeah, nothing like today. And again, he was paraplegic. I mean, I don't know what we could have done if we did get to him. 300-pound man, So literally December 21st, we ran out of our house with just, shoes. We went and got shoes and socks and a jacket because it was December, it was freezing, and we ran across to my buddy's house. So within a 7-month period, my dad was shot and killed, and the house I lived in with my grandma and grandpa burnt completely down. We lost everything we had, even my grandpa. Mm. And man, and I'll talk a little bit about the book I wrote later, and there's pictures of that in there. But just devastating, man. I was getting ready to turn 11 years old when the fire happened. So that's kind of my childhood trauma that I went through. And
And probably at the time, I mean, you're 10, 11 years old. You don't realize that that's all trauma. Or
correct.
Like, it's just, to you, that was just life, right? And,
right.
Even with your dad, I mean, I was going to ask you, but you probably didn't even realize early on in your childhood that your childhood was significantly different than other people's.
You're right, man. Because as a child, if you're in that atmosphere, that's all you know. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we went to my grandmother's for the weekend. So we got a little bit of a taste of a normal life, but it was just chaos. Even when my 4 brothers, even when I had my stepbrothers and my stepmom there, it was chaos. Like, I'm a very competitive person. And we were just always fighting, man, always fighting. So, yeah, so I remember going to live with my my aunt in Fort Wayne, Indiana for a few weeks to figure out what we were going to do. They tried to get me to go to counseling, but I was a pretty stubborn kid. I'm like, I ain't doing that. So, yeah, we went and we lived in a small one-bedroom apartment for about a year, year and a half. And then my grandmother rebuilt on the where the house burnt down. Like, my grandma was a very strong woman. She taught me a lot. She also taught me how to be negative, which was not a good thing. But yeah, she's such a strong woman. She lost her. See, I, as men, we're kind of selfish. I lost my dad and I lost my grandpa. Well, she lost her son and she lost her husband and her house. So she lost a lot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, she was a huge part of my growing up and a huge part of my influence. So then, just kind of going through life, I was angry. I remember when I was in the sixth grade, I think I was the only kid that got suspended in the school. I got in two fights. I remember punching a kid because he made a comment about my dad, probably not even knowing what happened. He just, you know how boys are.
Sure.
Made a comment, you know, and I just punched him, got in a fight with him, got suspended. Then another kid, I remember I punched him in the face because he wouldn't give me a cookie. The dumbest things ever, man. But I remember being angry. And then I remember playing football my seventh grade year. I never played organized sports. So I played football. And I was still to this day, I'm about 5'7". But back then I was only like 5'3". You know, 100 pounds, but I remember having so much anger in me, like, and I would just run and I'd just hit people as hard as I could and I didn't even care. And, I found something that I could let all my anger out in, you know, that outlet. And, something so simple that, my coach told me, Ron Clark, he said, to play football, you got to stay out of trouble and you got to get good grades. And I remembered that. You know, something so simple helped a kid that was, you know, troubled like me. So I stayed out of trouble and I wasn't on the honor roll by any means, but I got good grades, man. And football, me and my brother was walking down this dark path because he was a year older than me. He was a much better athlete than me. And I'll tell you about what happened to my brother versus, you know, kind of what happened to me, because we definitely took two different paths. So basically sports and coaches sent me on a path that I was walking down the wrong path and I got corrected by good men. And that's what good coaching can do. Coaching is not about winning and losing. It is about the example that you set, and just being a good role model. Just, that's what it's about, man. Yes, winning's great. I love it. There's nothing like winning on a Friday night in football, man. Because football definitely changed my life. And all those coaches, I have to thank for that. Matt Kemper, Lon Swihart, and Mark Hoffman. You know, they were not easy on me either. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were very, very challenging coaches to play for. My high school football coach made it to the Jets practice squad. And he was about 6'6". He played football at Miami University in Ohio. He was about 6'6", 325. And I think he said he ran a 4.740. And I'm like, what? Jeez. And he was a powerlifting champion. He was Ohio State powerlifting champion. So very strong man. And I just, from the very first day, I just kind of looked up to him and, you know, he was just a father figure to me. You know, when kids, kids that lose their fathers or have absent fathers, it's very easy for them to grow attached to, you know, father figures, coaches, you know, uncles, brother-in-laws, mm-hmm. that type of thing. And that's what I did. So.
Can I want to ask a question really quick.
Absolutely.
With your coaches. So they were super influential in your life. And I know at this time of your life, God really wasn't in the picture, right?
No.
Did these men really, do you know if they were quote unquote godly men at all? Or if they talked about, I mean, I know public schools and stuff, you kind of have to be careful with that kind of stuff, but I'm wondering if you knew if they were Christian men or not.
I don't know, but I mean, they never talked about their faith in front of me. We did get down every Friday night before a football game. We'd get down on a knee and we'd, you know, put our mm-hmm. hands on all of our brothers and we'd say the Lord's Prayer. But that was the extent of it.
The only reason I ask is because in a team unit, especially with football is such a team sport. Like, there are godly principles that are being taught and that foundation is being set even without having to mention anything about God. Or, you understand what I'm saying? Like,
100%, man.
And like, to be a role model for somebody, like, it's, our world is surrounded by godly influences, even without mentioning the word God or Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, it's all there. And I know you haven't gotten to that point in your story yet, but I can just see how, in a way, that's kind of how, or that's where a foundation was set. Not from going to church with your parents at a young right. age. You know what I mean? It was more these good influences in your life that didn't profess anything religiously at all. It was just more about being a good person, which later on, I think we'll be able to see that translates into being a godly person.
Amen. So, I mean, like, you're right, man. So what a good coach can do is set, like you said, it can set the foundation for the rest of your life. And I say this, and I mean it. And I mean it. I learned more on the practice football field and that football field than I ever did in the classroom. I think we've become a soft society. And when people go through hard things, it's good.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good. Jocko always taught, do you know the Jocko, mm-mm. the Navy SEAL?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep.
You know, his thing is good, you know. Everything that happens to you, good.
Good.
You lost Friday night, good. There's opportunity to improve. So you're right. With that foundation, they did 100% set. They work ethic, working hard, not giving up when it's tough, because life will beat you down. And if you don't establish those habits when you're young, it's very hard when you're older to have them in place, to get them in place. So I was very thankful to have men in my life like that. And you'll see, like, going through my life, there was, I think there's always a person like me was always looking for a father figure. And I would always, I always would need to find one, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So. But yeah, man, had a lot of success in football, and just all of a sudden, man, boom, football's over.
Yep.
And I was a football player. I was an athlete. Like, that's what I was known.
Who you were.
That's who I was. And when that kind of gets taken away from you, man, you do a lot of, like, man, what am I going to do? It wasn't depression by any mean, but it was like, I tried to go and play football. And when I got there, man, I fell in love with my, that was problem number one. And, it was 2.5 hours away, and being away from her and her parents were amazing people. And then I just, as much as I loved football, I didn't like playing there. And, so I find myself coming back and, you know, to my hometown, not with a plan, man. Now, here's one thing I will say, and this is going to be harsh on some teachers and guidance counselors and people. I had my whole life, I wanted to play football and I wanted to play college football. And my grandmother and guidance counselors and teachers, not my high school football coach, he knew I was a good football player. But they always told me, like, hey, in case that don't work, have a plan B. What's that telling you?
You're not good enough. You're a failure.
Like, hey, you're like, it's putting doubt in your mind, man. Mm-hmm. And at the time, you don't realize it. You just think they care about you. But man, that was the worst. But you hear enough people that you care about you say that, and it put doubt in your mind. It really did.
Subconsciously, too. Absolutely. It's not. Yeah.
So I find myself, you know, living at home with my grandmother, not really knowing what to do. I end up going to a tech school to be an architectural drafter. And long story short, I end up taking a job in Cincinnati, Ohio, and driving there about an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes. And it just didn't work out, man. The traffic was crazy. I'd get stuck in traffic. It would be a 3 hour. It's nothing to have a 3 hour drive home. So that didn't work out. And, here's where stuff can landslide so quick. I took a job, at Finish Line. I don't know if you guys, have you ever heard of Finish Line?
Mm-hmm.
Shoe store.
Yep.
So I took a job as an MIT, which is manager in training. And my whole thing was like, I'm just going to take this. It's a decent paying job. I'm going to take this job just while I look for another job, you know, in my field. 17 years later, you know, I just started going through the motions in life. I drank a lot. I wouldn't consider myself an alcoholic at the time. Now I think I was, but I would come home Friday night and just drink all day Friday, or not all day Friday, but Friday night and Saturday, just get hammer drunk with my friends. And just went through a period of that, just drinking a lot. And one night I went to a bachelor party after working at Finish Line. I think I got out of there about 10:30 at night at Finish Line. I went to a bachelor party. One of my good friends in high school had a bachelor party. And remember just, you know, when you go to a party late, I think I remember you saying that you've never drank. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember you saying that. But I remember getting to the party late and I was like, time to catch up. So I just start pounding stuff and just started drinking. And they did everything right, man. They took my keys. They did everything. But they didn't. I found my keys and I made a terrible decision to drive home. And luckily, I didn't hit anybody, but I did hit a guardrail. I hit one of those low guardrails and I flew into a cornfield about 150 feet to 200 feet into a guardrail. About 3:30 in the morning in a cornfield that was fully grown. So I sat there for about 4 hours before anybody could find me. And I drank so much. I don't even remember it. I don't remember the wreck. I don't remember anything. Wow. All I remember, waking up in a hospital with my girlfriend beside me. I broke my left fibula, shattered my right arm, I've got 2 steel plates and 13 screws.
Wow.
And just sat there for 4 hours. So, I've said this before, like I should have been dead, but it just wasn't my time. Like I had cuts everywhere, all over my face, all over my arms. I still got scars all over my fingers, just cut to pieces, man. Had to have 2 surgeries. Still to this day, I can't fully use my right hand. So that's kind of the person I was when I was young. And you would think I would learn my lesson, but I didn't. I never drank and drove again, but I still drank. End up taking a store up in Maryville, Indiana. Moved out to Maryville, which is south of Gary, Indiana. Took a store there, got engaged, got married, moved to Springfield, Illinois, got promoted, moved to Springfield, Illinois. You know, and my wife at the time was, you know, moved with me. And just life hits you, man. And it goes by so fast, you don't even realize it. And I was chasing money, you know, going from this store to that store, chasing money, trying to get that promotion, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember in Springfield, Illinois, we had a pretty hard time. My wife had a miscarriage. And when she had that miscarriage, a lot of things happened, man. I didn't want to be a father. At the time, I didn't know why, but now I know why. I didn't want to disappoint him. I didn't want to let him down like I was let down, man. And I just remember, you know, my wife at the time got pregnant again. And my reaction was like, really? And I know how big of a, you know, jackass am I in saying that in front of you guys knowing your story. Like, that's the kind of person I was, man. Life, I was just, it was terrible. Now that I, you know, can reflect back on that. But here's what I'll say. First time I held my boy, that all changed. Because we end up moving back to our hometown. I was gone for about 6 years. Moved, like I said, and we moved back to Ohio. And had our first kid. He just turned 20. He's getting ready to turn 21. Had another baby boy. Loved being a dad. I don't mind saying what I just said to you, because I loved being a dad. I had 2 boys, and man, they were my best friends. They were my life. And when I said that, I know it's bad to say that, because yes, I ignored the other half, and I made so many mistakes in my marriage, 100%, man. And that was one of them, you know, putting the kids first, and that type of thing. But I just loved being a father even so much. I was like, yeah, let's have another one. And then we had a little baby girl. She was born on January 1st. She was the first baby born in Butler County that year. So her name is Haven Lee. So
Heavenly.
There you go. That's exactly why we did it. So
that's beautiful.
Well, thank you. So yeah, man, just going through life. And and again, there was a role model in my life, and it was my father-in-law. My father-in-law and my mother-in-law were godly people. But they actively didn't go to church. They were great people, some of the greatest people on earth. And had an amazing relationship with them. Just loved them like my mom and dad, man. And one day out of the blue. Well, before I tell you that, just going through life with Finish Line, man, I worked there 17 years, and I loved the job and the people. But when you started having that family, the hours and the weekends and the holidays, it was awful. I was missing some family things that just killed me. And I remember, like, how do I get out of here? And then, so I tried to look for other jobs, like in my field. No. Like, it was so far gone. Like, you get pigeonholed into this retail manager. And the only jobs I could find was selling insurance and other retail jobs. So, long story short, I went to Best Buy for a 6 month period. And I got let go. That's when they reorganized. So I got let go. So there I am trying to chase money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Jumped jobs, went from a 17-year career with Finish Line, hopping to Best Buy, and within 6 months, they realigned their whole company, and they cut one sales manager out of every store. And I was the one that got cut, and I should have been cut. I was only there for, 6 months. The other guy was there for 5 years, and he knew the job way better than I did. So I had to work out a 5 weeks notice, and they were going to give me a 6 month severage. So the good thing is the guy I worked with was pretty lenient. He's like, find a job. So I found a job at Love's Travel Center, and I took that job. Have you ever heard of Love's?
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the biggest, travel center companies in the world.
It's one of my favorite places to stop when I'm traveling.
Okay. Yep. Clean faces and clean places and friendly faces, as they're
there
saying.
There you go.
Yeah. So I was very thankful, found a job with them, got in their MIT program, started working for them. And man, just remember, life is just going by so fast. And I'm just coasting through life, man. I chased money. Went to work for Love's, became a manager within 6 months. And when I say I made great money, I made great money at the cost of everything, though. It was a 24-hour business, 7 days a week. We never closed. I remember one Christmas morning, we had young kids. We woke up early. And they were opening their gifts, and I get a phone call, Love's Travel Center, shut it off. It's like, it's Christmas morning. Nothing can be that important. Get another phone call about 45 seconds later, same thing, not answering it. Then I get another one. So I'm like, something happened. So I answer the phone, and my assistant manager, who's working Christmas morning, told me that one of our employees went into a shower and had a massive heart attack and died.
Oh, no.
On Christmas morning. So that's the type of job, their career, I was working. And at this time, I started coaching football, too. And that was pretty important to me. I connected with one of my old high school football teammates. And we started coaching peewee football, and then we moved all the way up to high school football. And man, life just happens so quick. And one day I just woke up and my marriage was over. And it was the hardest thing I've ever went through in my life. But I am so thankful it happened. And I know that's kind of crazy, but it was a 16-year marriage, 22-year relationship. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't be sitting here in front of you today. I wouldn't be working where I'm working at. I was emotionally detached from everything. Remember, I didn't go to counseling. I didn't do anything. My whole entire life, I told you what, I told you what I told you, what happened to me when I was a kid, and I'm telling you, going through a divorce is by far the hardest thing I've ever been through. Seeing the house empty with no kids running around in it, it's terrible. And again, I'm thankful for that because that's where my faith came in. I remember a buddy who I'm very thankful for, Justin Swirtzel, played football with him. I went, you know, we separated and I went and I talked to him because I knew he went through a divorce. And he was like, come to church with me. Come to church with me. And I haven't been in a church for a long time. We would always go maybe on Easter or maybe on a Christmas service, but it never meant anything to me. So Justin was persistent. He kept asking me to come to church. And at this time, I was desperate. I wanted to save my marriage and everything. And I go into church. And mind you, I haven't been in the church for a long time. And I hated God. I did. All the victimizing, like, why me? That was me. Why me? You owe me something. You owe me something. That was my mentality. You know, and then I went through a divorce. Like, come on, man. Like, really? Like, you, come on. Like, if you're such a good God, you know, all the things that you say. And then I remember going to church, and I remember the sermon that day. There were some beach toys on one side of the stage, you know, and he even had sand and everything. It was kind of cool. And on the other side, it was just a book bag. And I remember Jeff Travis saying, a lot of people think a relationship with God is like this, over here and playing with the toys that it's this, you know, playing in the water, playing in the sand, making castles, all that, like it's not. And he walks over to the book bag and he puts it on. He goes, this is what it's like. It's like God's always going to be with you. And he goes, no matter how far away you walk from God, it only takes one step back to get him back. And that changed my life. I had nothing else to lean on, man. What? Nothing. And I thank God. This whole time in my head, I don't know how, I love having conversations about how people hear God's voice and that type of thing. Like, I love having conversations like that. But this whole time about, and I was 38 when I was going through my divorce. So for the longest time, I'd hear in my head, tell your story. Tell your story. Right? And I heard it for a long time. And I believe God was trying to get me to tell my story. And I was disobedient. I was like, nope, I'm doing it my way. My way's better. I don't want to do that. I'm coaching football. I'm coaching football. I'm helping these young, you know, these youth, you know. And then God stripped me away, stripped my family away and all of that, I think, to humble me and to, like, he's a relentless man. And I kept hearing tell my story, and I didn't know how. So I went through my divorce, found my faith. And I will say this, man, my divorce forced me to deal with all my childhood trauma that us as men, and I know you know this, we shove things down to the depths of our stomach and we just don't talk about it.
We don't talk about how we feel.
Nope. Nope. That's not what we do here. And it's a big crock of crap. It is, man. We're taught at such a young age, especially our generation, to just, you know, suck it up, just move on. And that's what I did my whole life. I did that my whole life, and I was emotionally detached from a lot of things. So I remember my divorce forced me to deal with my childhood trauma. I remember hiring a counselor. She was from Texas, and I never ever in my life went to counseling. And I did these over Zoom calls. And I remember me telling my story to her in 6 weeks. It was like hour-long sessions. I was telling her my life. I was telling her what I was going through, and you know, kind of like we are now, just in way more depth. And I remember at the end of week six, she was like, "On next week, we're going to talk about your triggers." And I said, "What's triggers?" Like, that's how detached I was. Like, I didn't even know the word. And she told me what they were, and I was like, "Oh, I got a few of those." I instantly knew, you know, a few of my triggers. So she emailed me this big piece of paper. It had 20 words in bold, and then under those 20 bolded words, it had a bunch of like subwords under them. Mm-hmm. So week seven comes, and she goes, "All right, so let's talk about your triggers." She goes, "Tell me about a trigger." And I said, "One of my triggers is coming home after a long day of work and seeing the house disorganized or messy. You know, what kind of a jerk am I? Like, there's three young kids around, and I would come home and get mad because the house isn't tidied. Like, and I would get mad. I'd get angry. I would shut myself off. And that's what I do." And I remember her saying, which word, when you came home and you saw that house the way it was, which word of the bolded words did you feel?" I said, "Angry." And she goes, "Under that," she goes, "what are the three words that stand out the most to you?" I said, "Alone, let down, and disappointed." She goes, "Who left you alone, who disappointed you, and who let you down?" I said, "My dad." My dad. I didn't even have to think about it. So she took me back to my childhood, and she said, "Every time you feel anger, you feel your dad letting you down, leaving you alone, and disappointing you." And then she told me something that changed my life. And she says, I mean, she helped me tremendously, but she's like, "Do you think any 10-year-old kid had the emotional capacity to deal with what you went through?" I said, "No, most adults don't."
Right.
And she goes, "So now when you get angry, I want you to think about that 10-year-old boy. And now that's just a way for me to control it." And I do. Now I laugh. Now I smile. Like, it's just amazing. And I tell men all the time, I was like, "You have to know where that anger comes from. You have to. If you don't, then you can't. It has a grip on you." So moving. I mean, I know there's a lot of there. But, you know, that's kind of, and I gave my life to Christ that day in that church, but I didn't start living faithfully. I didn't. Like, I didn't know what it looked like. I went to church for about 7 more months, and then I quit going. Because when I started to go on to church, I wanted to save my marriage, and I thought church would be an avenue to save it. And that just wasn't the case. And when the divorce went through, I quit going to church. Again, a lot of those feelings came up, you know, mm-hmm. you know, of why me, all of that stuff. So, but yeah, man, that was kind of my life up until about 40 years old. And, it's crazy because I wasn't living in faith. Like I said, I didn't go to church or anything like that. And I was still just going through the motions of life. And then, I met Dan Schmidt again. So Dan Schmidt, he gets super, uncomfortable when I talk about him. So when he watches this, he's going to get like, but me and Dan were football captains together. He was in my graduating class, and his parents were amazing, man. Like, they took me in, just amazing parents. He had a younger brother, and we were like brothers, man. He went on to play Division I football at University of Dayton, and I remember going every year watching him, at least watching him one time. I think his senior year I went twice. Have some just great memories with this man. And you know, as you grow older and you have families, you know, that kind of, that friendship, that bond is always there, but the friendships kind of just gets, you know, it's life. Mm-hmm. So I remember one day, we got a new football coach at the school that I coached, and he was like, "Hey, I'm looking for a sponsor for a camp." And I said, "Man, I know a great guy. He owns a glass company, played football here. Let me get you his number." So I gave him his number. He calls Dan. Dan sponsors the camp. When the camp's going on, Dan comes to the camp. And I want to remind you, for probably 10 to 15 years now, I've heard this voice in my head tell my story, right? Right? I've heard it forever. And I just didn't know how. I'm like, I don't know how. Like it was just a constant back and forth in my head. And I remember Dan coming to this camp, and he talked at the end, and we were getting ready to say bye and everything, gave him a hug, and he's like, "Hey," and he looked me straight in the eyes and was like, "I started a podcast." And I went, "Cool." But in my head, it instantly clicked. It instantly clicked that that's how I was going to do it. Cause I trusted Dan. When you play sports with people, when you go through hard things with folks, and I knew Dan was a great man, and he built a business, and I just knew that was the avenue I was going to tell my story. So I think he told me 5 weeks into the podcast. It still took me, even though I knew, it still took me. I was episode 24, and he told me at week 5. So it took me that long to make the plunge of telling my story. So I was 45 years old. And that's the first time I told anybody anything about my life. And wow. From what's happened in the past 2 years of my life is nothing short of a miracle too.
So in case you're wondering, the podcast is called Be Tempered.
Yes.
There's a little play on words there with, the glass.
Yes.
So go give it a listen. Listen to Sean's episode. Listen to all of them. Shoot. I started listening a couple weeks ago. They're great. Kind of similar to some of the stuff we're doing. Just talk about life, telling stories and God mixed in there. And, but I wanted to mention too, as you're telling your story and talking about how you were, everybody listening knows a Sean, a 10-year-old Sean, somebody that doesn't act the way that we think people should act, right? Or they drink too much, or just everything that you were explaining. You know, I had a former teammate of mine come to mind, and he was just very, and not saying that this is exactly how you were, but this is a coach that changed my life and changed my perspective. I had a teammate who didn't act like everybody else. He was very full of himself. He was mean to a lot of people. And me, my 18-year-old self, or however old I was, looked at him, and he was talented, right? But I looked at him as, I thought he was cocky. I thought he just thought he was the most incredible person in the world, right? But my coach pulled me aside one time and said, your life has been very different than his life growing up. He's been through things that you can't even imagine. And he doesn't act that way because he thinks really highly of himself. He acts that way because he has no self-esteem, no self-confidence, and he's trying to make it look like he does, right? And man, that I started noticing the truth in all of that, and it made me look at him completely different. And hearing your story and everything, there's people out there that they don't act the way that I think they should act, right? Or they don't act like me, the way that I was raised or taught. And it's because I have no idea what they've been through, right? There's things that happen in their life that they don't even know why they act or say or do the things that they do, right? And listening to you, Sean, and where you are now, and being able to, not once when you were telling your story did you say, I acted this way because of this. It wasn't my fault. This was my dad's fault, or this was such and such fault, or I drank because of this, you know, or I got a divorce because of this. You didn't point the finger when you were telling your story. You did say maybe back then, the old Sean, you were kind of the victim person,
right?
But today, when you're sitting here telling your story, not a single bit of that came out. It was all on you. You put all of the blame on yourself. And that's one of the most incredible things to see in somebody, is when they can have some self-reflection and understand that things in my life are the way that they are because of me. Even though when you're sitting here telling your story, you had every right to say that you were the way that you were because of this, or because of this, or because of this, right? And maybe 5 years ago you would have said it like that. But now, because of your changed heart, and really because of God in your life, you were able to let go of all of that. To me, it looks like it's just so freeing. And even though there's so many things in your life that went wrong, that weren't your fault, that was just because of other people and other decisions, but today you've been able to release all of that and forgive. I mean, you didn't mention anything about forgiving, but it looks to me like that's what's happened in your life. And you've really just been able to give it to the Lord and let him take it from you. And I don't know if you've noticed that in your life, but for me, it's easy to see that side of it.
Yeah. One of the things I always say is, Sean Rubish's way did not work. And you're right. And that's what I run a men's group. And the hardest thing for men to do is look in the mirror and try to blame themselves. One of the greatest lines I heard is, it was on Joe Rogan podcast. There was a musician, and he said, gosh, this is such a great thing. He said, what happened to you when you're a child is not your fault, but it's your responsibility to take, it's your responsibility to, you know, deal with it. And I didn't deal with it. And therefore, I had issues my whole entire life until I dealt with it. And I said I gave my life, you know, to Christ when I was 38, but I didn't start living faithfully until really, I mean, there was another rock bottom moment that I had, and I'm just like, wow, you know, I started dating a girl. We had about a 2-year relationship, and then boom, overnight it was gone. And I was just like, man. And that's when I was just like, I'm done. Like, I remember getting baptized and I remember a warmth coming over me. And then just because I got baptized with my son, which was amazing. And I started going, like I said, I started going to church, and I've been going to a church for steadily about a year and a half now. And you're right, man. It's everything you see in me right now. It's not because of me. I don't want to do this. I don't like doing these podcasts. I get nervous. I get anxious. I get everything, man. Like all of the things that it's just a conversation is what I say, and I get through it. But, yeah, it's nerve wracking. For some reason, I actually held my emotions somewhat in check. usually I'm a very emotional guy. I'm not sure, you know, and I used to think it used to be such a weakness. Mm-hmm. To be emotional. And me and Dan talk about that a lot. And yeah, it's not, man. Being vulnerable is I think strength. Being able to look in a mirror and be like, man, I don't like that guy. And doing something about it is like, that's strength, because most men don't want to. So.
Yeah. You mentioned that you gave yourself to Christ 38, right? Yep. But things didn't really change.
Yep.
And that, I mean, that relationship, coming to know Christ, there's something inside you that changed at 38.
Yep.
Right? But you mentioned he's not just going to, and I've talked about this before, he doesn't just show himself to us and say, okay, now we have a relationship. Now you're going to do this and this and this and this and this and this. Right? It's still constantly choosing to be who he wants me to be.
Obedience,
aligning my will with his. And, but just because that day that you come and you accepted Jesus Christ as the Savior, it doesn't just all of a sudden, now you know how to live life, right? Like a Christian. It's not, I mean, there's definitely an aha moment there, but there's still multiple aha moments where you're continually changing. Right. And, it's, yeah, I think too often we think, oh, I'm a Christian, so this is who I am now, instead of waking up every morning and being like, I'm a Christian. I'm going to decide today to live my life and to become better every single day. And you don't know how to do it until you know how to do it. And I'm sitting here today. I've had God in my life my entire life, and I'm still telling you, I don't know how to do it. I'm learning things every single day, right? But it is that decision every day to follow.
Absolutely. And that's a great segue into like the plan. Like God's plan is bigger than we could ever imagine. And to talk a little bit about it, get back to Dan. When Dan told me about the podcast, I knew that was how I was going to tell my story, right? So I finally tell my story. At the end of that podcast, Dan looks at me and he's like, you're going to write a book. And I go, no, I'm not. But he put that thought in my head, right? And then the thought never left, never went away. And again, man, God is just relentless. When I hear that write a book, I'm like, I don't even know how to write a book. I don't know how to do any of this. Then Jason Coger comes into my life, right? Jason Coger wrote a book, you know? Mm-hmm. So he kind of tells me what he did. I was like, oh, I can do that. And so I, you know, wrote a book, hired the person that he hired to help navigate that. And that's kind of the connection with me and Jason. And Jason did the Be Tempered podcast too. But when Dan started that podcast, you can go back and watch it on the episode. God put it on his heart to start that podcast for two people. His number two person that he wanted to start it for, and this is Dan's words, not mine. His number two podcast he wanted to start this for was to, for everybody could hear Coach Kelly. Mike Kelly is a Hall of Fame football coach at the University of Dayton. And the number one person he wanted on the podcast was me, because he knew my story. He knew somewhat of my story. Tell me that ain't God working. I've heard for many of years, 10, 15, 20 years, tell my story. Dan starts a podcast and he wants me on it without even telling me, right? It's just in his head. Then he starts the podcast. I do the podcast. He tells me to write a book. And anybody that knows me knows that my English is not great. Like, seriously, it's bad. But I know how to use tools, you know? And I wrote the book. And then the crazy thing is one day, we have this place called Hayes Arboretum. It's where we do those gratitude walks that you, I think you saw the walk. Mm-hmm. And I was walking one day. Well, Dan challenged me to do 75 hard. That is just like a mental, physical program. I lost 40 pounds. I'm very thankful, even though he angered me when he challenged me. He called me undisciplined. But that's what good friends do, man. You know, he challenged me, and he knows what kind of person I was. If I got challenged, I'd go out and do it. So I completed 75 hard, lost 40 pounds, wrote the book during all of that. And, well, actually, after that, I wrote the book. But I remember one day seeing him in Hayes Arboretum, and this is, you know, be tempered rolling. I didn't work for him at the time, and I look at him. I'm like, I'm going to work for you. Like, I'm going to be a part of this podcast. I don't know how, but I am. And he was like, oh, okay. And sure enough, man, after I wrote the book, we did another episode. And Dan is a very, very successful businessman. And he realized, like, he's running a glass company. He's running a podcast. He's running a farm. Like, he's spread thin. So he was going to hire a marketing advertising, you know, behind the scenes guy for the podcast. And it wasn't going to be me. He had in mind that he wanted a professional, like someone that knew exactly how to do everything. Mm-hmm. And one of his friends, another business owner, looked at him and was like, dude, you're thinking about this the wrong way. He's like, you got to get somebody that's passionate about helping people. And he literally said, what about Sean? I've watched his episodes. And man, the crazy thing is I've been working for Dan since December now, under the Be Tempered podcast. And I think you'll understand this, but it is such a blessing because we get all kinds of stories, crazy stories, man. And I never went through addiction, and neither has Dan. And we started to get into these heavy, like, addiction people. Mm-hmm. And watching the weight come off of their shoulders after they tell the story is amazing. You can literally see, like, someone's picking that boulder off of their shoulders. And to hear messages from people, and it's healing for me just to hear that. And
absolutely.
I mean, because I know God didn't put me through everything that I went through to sit on the sidelines and not help men, and not to help, you know, people that went through what I went through. And that's what I'm doing, man. I wrote a book. It's called Turning Pain into Purpose. And my life, the crazy thing is, like Jeff said, when you accept Christ in your life and you start walking down that road, your life doesn't get easier. It doesn't. You know, I used to cuss a lot. Like, God takes one thing. I think he just, he works on you a little bit at a time. He, like, I coach football, and it is the filthiest place, language ever. And I'm just like, I got to watch my mouth. And you feel convicted when you start, when you drop F-bombs and stuff like that. And you're just like, oh, man, I got to stop doing that. And so you just slowly, and I'm not perfect by any means, like, but he just slowly but surely just works on you, man.
Absolutely. Well, Sean, thank you. You've been awesome, and I've been very blessed to be able to sit with you and learn from you. Before we go, I'd love for you to share one thing that you know to be true.
One thing I know to be the truth, the most important decision in your life is going to be either you're going to accept Jesus Christ as your Savior or you're not. That is 100% the truth. And it's that simple. Like, everybody talks about left and right and this and that. Like, it's Jesus or not. The way I feel, man. And, you know, when you start to understand God's plan and the way it all works, and, you know, I could have never imagined sitting here, you know, having a conversation with you, you know, being an author of a book. And it makes me cringe even saying that, because I just so far off my radar, you know, 5 years ago. And, you know, he just has a plan for us, man. And when you start walking in obedience, it's hard. It's very hard. But you're only on this earth for a very short period of time. And in the Bible, it says, if you follow Christ, you will suffer. So that's, I hope that someone can see that in me. And that's what I pray for, that I always had this term. Someone told me about Bible thumping people. Like, if you'd have came to me, you know, in my early 40s and tried to, like, preach at me, it wouldn't have worked. It wouldn't have worked, man. The church I go to is amazing. They are, I'll tell you a little quick story about the church I go to, because it's phenomenal, and this is what kind of people they are. We interviewed a guy named Zach Schisler, and he was an addict. He OD'd 3 times. His choice of drug was an 8-ball, which is a mixture of meth and cocaine, and he'd shoot it up. And he goes to the same church that I go to, just a different location. And he would walk into church high all the time, and they never threw him out. They hugged him. They loved on him. And now, through that, he did our podcast, and last year he owns a business. It's called Recovery. Forget the name of it, but he basically owns a small business. Was nominated for Small Business of the Year at our Preble County Chambers of Commerce, and is changing lives every day. He helps people that are in halfway houses or sober houses. He owns his own construction company. He goes and hires those people because he wants to help them, because he knows the struggle. So, like, that's God's plan to take him. And Zach always says, he took my mess and made it into a message. And, man, it is just powerful listening to those stories, and I'm so blessed, like you said, when I get to sit across from a table for somebody and I get to see the weight come off their shoulders, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't believe I get paid for it.
Well, and like you mentioned, I think his name was Zach, right?
Zach Schisler, yes.
Zach. Had he been kicked out of that church,
yep,
for showing up high, you know, time and time again, there's no way he'd be where he is today.
Yep.
Right?
No way.
and you wouldn't be where you are today without the angels in your life. Dan, your grandma, some of your other coaches, right? They're
100%.
And you yourself, you're an angel for other people. Maybe not an angel in the same way we always think of an angel, but God needs us to be angels from time to time. So thank you, Sean, for sitting with me and for being an angel.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. I do.
All right. Thanks again, Sean.
Hey, no problem, man.
Go look for those angels.
I will do. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Angels Among Us. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow along for more stories of everyday miracles and reminders that angels are among us. If you have a story to share, please email or DM us with a brief summary. We'd love to hear from you. And remember, when we are waiting, God is working.